Rave Radio. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another fun-filled excitement technology world of AV Insider. I'm your host, John Imoda. You guys have probably heard of me by now, I'm sure. And if not, well, that's me. That's who I am. This is my show. I got stuff to say. We are the only podcast produced in 3D. Put your 3D glasses on now. Enjoy the show. And we'll talk more about that later. As always, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you go to ingrammicro.com, you can check out everything they have to offer for you as an integrator. Today, my special guest is David Kirk. He is the VP of Product Marketing over at Epiphan Systems. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks again for being on the show. I appreciate it. You know, as always, like, I know everyone has lives and stuff. I enjoy the show mostly just because I get to talk about technology and I get to learn. So who doesn't like to learn? Unless you're, I guess, a child in school. So can you tell me a little bit about the company, Epiphan Systems? Can you tell me about them?
Sure, yeah. The company was founded by our CEO, Mike Sandler, 10 years ago, I guess 11 years ago now, in 2003. And it started out of a need to share video, basically. And we started with a simple product that was called a VGA to USB. And the whole idea was, if you had any device, whether it's an ultrasound or a piece of instrumentation gear, whatever it is, if it's got a VGA output, you could plug it into this device and then plug the other end, which is USB, into your computer, allowing you to capture that video from whatever device you plugged into it. So it started with that very simple concept. It was very popular and very successful, and that product really then spawned into many versions of what we call frame grabbers, being able to grab video and supply it into a laptop or any computer. Mm-hmm. And it just grew from there. Gradually, we started doing recording and streaming and other functions on top, but the real fundamental basis for the company was always capturing a video.
10, 11 years ago, what would you say, I mean, this might be, you know, just a random question, what would you say is what really was the main devices outputting VGA to USB, or the most popular at the time when the company launched? Was there like a specific type of video capture or products that they were more designed for?
It was really just most of the video capture happening at that time was all bus based. So you put a capture card inside of a PC, and then you could grab composite video or VGA or whatever. But at the time, almost all the devices on the market, if not all the devices, were internal capture cards for desktop kind of chassis based PCs. And the difference in our product was that it was USB based, so you could plug it into any laptop or computer and it was portable. So it wasn't tied to a given machine. Yeah. It was something you could just carry around and plug into whatever you need.
I gotcha. And now, as you mentioned, technology is advanced. I'm sure you have much more broad-based solutions than VGA to USB, perhaps HDMI and other sources, I would assume. And then you talked about streaming as well. Can you give me a couple more examples of that?
Yeah, so the VGA to USB basically spawned a line of products along the sort of same vein, where it was VGA grabbing over USB, and then we added DVI and HDMI also grabbing over USB. We added an Ethernet one, so where people needed to have a network between the source that they were trying to grab and the PC or the laptop that they were trying to grab it with. We created something called a VGA to Ethernet, and people could plug VGA or DVI, HDMI into that and go over an Ethernet network, typically local area network, into their capture PC. And most recently, we've upgraded from USB 2, which was sort of where we started, USB 1 and USB 2, and now we support USB 3. And that's really enabled a lot better user experience, because USB 3 has the bandwidth to carry native HD video without doing any kind of compression on it. So USB 3 has been a great technology for us, where users know exactly what they're going to get. They get a constant frame rate, perfect quality. We don't have to do any compression or modify the data. We just have to grab it and pour it through the USB 3 port.
Now, does Epifan Systems only supply the products to allow the video from one device to the next, or does there actual, do you make like software as well to do the video capture?
Yeah, that's a good point. So we do build drivers for Windows, Linux, and Mac. So the drivers are loaded into the capture computer, mm-hmm. and then with a small application we call Epifan Capture that can run on your Mac or on your Linux or Windows machine, and it gives you basic functionality, obviously, to be able to view the video that you're capturing, do some simple recording, that kind of stuff. So it comes with that software. All of our grabbers come with that software, and it's fairly simple. But the other nice thing about the drivers that we ship is they do operate across standard interfaces. So Direct Show on Windows, Video for Linux on Linux, and across a QuickTime interface for Mac, you have ability to use any kind of third-party application. So if you're using, you know, Adobe applications or Microsoft Media Encoder, or you've got other applications that you want to use in your standard Windows system or Mac system, you just plug our drivers in underneath, and we turn whatever you plug into our frame grabber into effectively a webcam for that application. So that we do supply a simple application, but a lot of our users are using third-party applications to actually manipulate the video once they get it into their machine.
Okay. The type of products that you supply, or the company supplies, sounds very much more geared towards the commercial side of for integrators or anyone in general, I would say. The people installing these systems or implementing these systems, I think would be more on the security, security would be one of them, on the commercial side versus residential, the things like healthcare, education, security, things like that, or even the broadcasting areas, things like that.
Absolutely. We are almost completely business to business. We do get a few, I would say, consumers, people maybe putting together their own private podcasts and that kind of thing. But in general, the products are made to be kind of heavy duty, 24/7 kind of mission critical application capable. So they typically do sit in applications that are medical or education, mm-hmm. Transport, security, that kind of stuff. So it is almost always part of a larger system that an integrator puts together for their client to be able to say, you know, maybe it's military application, maybe it's education, and a large system integrator goes in and says, okay, I'm going to outfit your entire campus for lecture capture and sharing and that kind of stuff. So usually we're not selling directly to the end user. Quite often it's through some systems integrator or mm-hmm. some kind of consultant that's putting a system together.
You mentioned kind of lecture-based system. So, yep. For an example, I could see this being probably a rather huge market for the educational systems or the integrators that are doing education rooms, boardrooms, high-rises, things like that for the commercial side of things, who are doing presentations on large scales or those types of media rooms for the that side of things.
It's been really huge in the education space. We really started out with the VGA to USB. One of the first markets that really took off was medical, actually. There was a lot of people wanting to grab ultrasound and record it, because at the time you could print out a kind of static image of an ultrasound, but if you've ever seen ultrasound, it's actually much more like a movie than a photo. So having just that one still image really doesn't capture much about the ultrasound session itself. So we got a lot of early clients in the medical space, and that quickly moved into other spaces, and education was the second one that really took off for us. And one of the nice properties about the products that we sell is in an education environment, it allows you to bring in just about any video source you can think of. So whether it's a smart board or a document camera, even a microscope, or just your standard laptop cameras, you can bring all of that stuff in and then use whatever software you use. There's a lot of people using Mac and Camtasia in an education environment just to record lectures or record tutorials, and they want to bring in sources like iPads or document cameras or microscopes, smart boards, and they just plug them right into our device, and Camtasia sees it as a camera, or other applications do the same thing. So it's been very popular in education, and once we started to get into education, then we got a lot more feedback from people wanting to do the recording in an all-in-one box. So instead of having our frame grabber plugged into a USB port into a computer and then running separate software on that computer, we eventually evolved to create those little boxes ourselves. So we have little network appliances that will do the recording and the streaming of the lecture in real time, and that's been a huge hit in the education side.
What would you say is, I guess because you are, like, you know, you're selling to, like, say, like an integrated solutions company, is there one field or one specific field or market that integrators are selling or implementing these products more than others versus, like, you know, education or broadcasting solutions or the, what do you call it, government or things like that?
For us, it's strangely, it's been a fairly even split. So I would say education, healthcare, and then corporate kind of IT, so meeting rooms and mm-hmm. kind of things, probably make up about 20% each. And then there's a few smaller ones like transportation and security and some others that kind of make up some more. But those ones are pretty evenly split for us, and they make up, you know, a good portion. And then there's a few smaller ones that fit in there as well.
What would you screen capture in transportation field? What are people using?
Yeah, lots of times in transportation, there's things like people have like a video wall, or they have a video console where operators are sitting at a console and they've got some kind of display on their, you know, they've got four screens or whatever, and it might be, if it's in, say, a train station, it's showing the location of all the different trains or the actual state of all the switches on the tracks.
Yeah.
And all that stuff is just displayed on their computer screen in real time in a custom application. And what they want to be able to do is grab all those screens and record them all to make sure that for training purposes or in the event of some kind of incident, they have a record to go back to and be able to say, okay, exactly what was the operator able to see at the time. So anything that's got those kind of visual displays, we've got them installed in airports that have those little sky trains that run around,
mm-hmm.
installed in major railway networks in Europe, where they've got cameras partway down the track, as well as having this kind of status of all their switch states and where the trains are and that kind of thing. So that usually it's kind of an operator console that's multi-screen that they're trying to capture all those screens together.
For anyone listening out there, I'm curious to see, write me an email. I'd like to hear stories if you guys are already using their solutions or alternative methods that you could suggest you are already using them or would use them. I'd like to learn a bit more from people out there installing them. Just any unique applications. And speaking of unique applications, can you speak to any ones that aren't really the norm of, you know, what we've talked about, like education, government, things like that?
We've had some cool little applications. We have Leroy Chow is another VP at our company, and he's actually a U.S. astronaut, so he's been commander of the space station. And got introduced to our technology when he was an astronaut. They were actually doing ultrasound from the space station on the astronauts. So the astronauts had an ultrasound machine up there, and they were using our little, we call it our VGA broadcaster. They were connecting that up and sending the data down to Houston so that they could measure all of the sort of bone density and muscle density decay of the astronauts as they spent 6 months up in space. And that's how Leroy got introduced to the company, and when he was back on Earth, he looked up our CEO, and they kind of hit it off, and he's working for us now. So that was a really cool technology, and they did a similar kind of thing up on Everest, actually, at base camp in Everest. They were using our technology to capture medical displays and ultrasounds and send that back down.
We need to get a couple of your guys' systems on Virgin Space.
There you go. Yeah, that was fantastic.
So if you're listening, Sir Richard Brent, let's get some of those in space. I think that'd be a great great ride for the people. And then imagine do they implement this kind of stuff in courtrooms and such as well?
We do. We do have a number of our devices in courtrooms. We have some large systems that will scale up to 64 HD inputs at a time and stream and record all that. And we've got some guys, that's our VGA grid product, and we've got some guys in the U.S. courts who have implemented that in a couple places. Some of them are using it just to literally record the courtroom proceedings, so they'll have multiple cameras inside the courtroom, mm-hmm. and they'll want them all just recorded and synchronized. So that's the other sort of neat piece of technology we do, is we make sure that when we're capturing all these sources, if they're in the same system, we synchronize them all down to the millisecond. So when you're playing them back, you've got a coherent record of exactly what happened. But we also have a neat sort of pilot going on right now where they're using it to present evidence. So instead of printing out tons of documents and handing them out to the jurors and the judge, instead the attorney can just plug his laptop into our system, and then they're using that to actually stream to tablets. So every juror gets a tablet, a little Nexus tablet, and is able to see for themselves what the attorney is trying to present in real time. So no longer are they kind of flipping through documents and, you know, everyone's wondering, is juror number 6 really on page 82, paragraph 6? They don't have to worry about that anymore, because now they can just highlight the text right on the tablet. Everybody sees it synchronously and in real time. So that's something new in the courtroom. And we're starting to see all kinds of these kind of cool technologies making their way into the courtroom, where before it was a very sort of paper process environment. They're really moving towards technology quickly in the courtroom.
Yeah, technology is an amazing thing. I say amazing because, seriously, to send some knowledge like on the instant like that and share that, just to have it instantly, like you're talking about. So if I'm a lawyer and I'm presenting some evidence and I don't have to have the physical, I could have images, I could have all the paperwork and digitally send that to all the jurors at once. And this is where I want to stop at, is you said on Nexus tablets, is it specific to Android, or you just preferred, or you just started with that specific tablet?
Yeah, it's just that was the one that they chose for the pilot.
Okay.
And I think there were a number of reasons behind their decision. I think one of them was it just happened to be easy to develop a kind of kiosk application where the juror can't just, you know, bring up a game or start surfing the web on these tablets. They're locked. So the only thing they display is the evidence being presented. So it's easily developed on top of an Android platform. Not to say that you couldn't do it on something like an iPad, but the Android seemed to be the easiest target. And I know they were also concerned about battery life, because they want to make sure that, you know, jurors aren't having to swap their tablets all the time and that kind of thing. So there maybe a whole bunch of reasons, but that's what they selected for the first pilot was they actually ended up on the Nexus.
Yeah, just curious. I have a couple of lawyer friends myself, and they talk about having tablets in the courtroom and it for similar purposes, but not to the extent of what you're talking about, where they can stream media back and forth, or not back and forth, but at least to the jurors like that. It's more for themselves to not have to carry on all the documents, but for them to be able to share that with everyone, that's a one major step beyond that, because now they're in real time able to share with multiple jurors. Is there a limitation on what they're doing right now, because this is such a new niche for the technology? Is there a limitation on how many people they can share with currently? I know this is like a brand new pilot program.
I think the target for them was 15 simultaneous users, because mm-hmm. there are 12 jurors in a trial, and then obviously the judge needs to see it.
Sure.
There's courtroom clerks that need to see it, mm-hmm. And then the other attorney needs to see it as well. So there, I think the target was 15 or 16 simultaneous users, which is what they implemented. The only real limitation that I'm aware of in terms of how many users could be seeing it is the Wi-Fi bandwidth in the court that they're using to actually stream across.
Okay.
So they set up their own hotspot just for that courtroom. Mm-hmm. It's mobile, so they have all this kind of stuff on a cart, so they basically can take it into any courtroom, they wheel it in, they hand out the tablets, and they set up the little hotspot right there. And as far as I understand, that's really the limitation is the bandwidth. But that, you know, even over the time that we've been doing this kind of pilot, it's increased significantly in technology from where they started. So that's becoming less and less of a kind of barrier.
I could almost see that same type of information being shared on news shows. I mean, you know, the newscasters, the weather guy, everyone kind of, let's just say for an example, okay, the weatherman, he has his tablet and he's, okay, this is what's going on, and able to like screencast or share to the screen behind him, and maybe even share some of like the breaking news to direct to their thing, so they are able to collaborate with each other in that type of media broadcast system.
Yeah, it's been, I wouldn't say necessarily that I know of any weather specific applications, but certainly in the broadcast environment, being able to get data from the field, that was always very camera centric in the broadcast domain in the past, and it's becoming much more friendly to the kind of bring your own device, so that the person in the field isn't just a camera. It could be someone with an iPad or a laptop or some kind of even very sort of unique piece of equipment. As long as it's got a video output, you just plug it in and off you go.
So that brings me to a good question. Do you guys have any cloud-based solutions? For an example, like, you know, let's say a reporter's on the field, he's able to record or save that media, but then maybe upload it to a localized cloud where the people back at the station are able to grab that and screencast or save it.
Yeah, we don't. Epifan itself doesn't operate a cloud service, mm-hmm. But we do have interoperability trials with a whole number of the typical big guys who are running content distribution networks and cloud services. So, you know, the likes of Wowza and Akamai and these kind of guys, we test with them regularly to make sure that our equipment is easy to use and functional with their environment. So it's fairly easy for a user to connect up our stuff to whichever cloud service they want, whether that ends up being, you know, Google or YouTube or Akamai, whomever they want to go with. It's fairly easy to connect that stuff up, and the standardization of the streaming protocols has really come a long way in the last 5 to 7 years to make that a reasonably easy thing for people to do.
I almost want to ask for more, like kind of not your typical applications, but I'm still kind of, I think, amazed by the streaming in the courtroom scenario. If you're doing government type applications and commercial stuff, to share the information with other people like that, I think there's a huge step forward for us. I'm just thinking like in boardrooms. Right, so if you're doing meetings, usually, you know, you have your boring PowerPoints projected onto the wall or wherever. But let's say, you know, if currently the limitation is 15, or at least that's what the goal is right now, and that's what they're at, and you're doing larger scale rooms for education, and right. For the presenter to be able to share that information, you know, like a. Whether that's let's say I'm going to an AV training and I'm in the crowd, everyone gets a tablet or something like that, to be able to share information, things like that. I don't know if it necessarily is any better than the larger screen up front, but I guess the idea to share that with everybody instantly is kind of a neat trick.
Yeah, that's been one that's come up many times in discussions where people want to do exactly that. Again, the bandwidth of the Wi-Fi becomes the limiting factor there, but that's definitely an application that people want to do. Another little neat one is in that same environment, if you're at a large conference and there's a whole number of, you know, sessions going on simultaneously, often you're in kind of a big conference center and you walk down a hallway and there's several doors, each with different sessions going on behind each of those doors, and you don't really, there's just a typically just a sign on the door that says, you know, this is session A131 with a title. Now what they're doing is they're putting a digital sign out in front of those, and then they're streaming what's inside to that screen on the outside, which allows people to stop for a couple seconds, take a look and see if they're interested in the topic, see who the speaker is, and wait for an appropriate time to kind of open the door and sneak their way into the back of the presentation if they're running late and not getting there at the start. So we do see, even in a kind of conference facility, lots of applications for things like digital signs and sharing that content immediately. Another one in that kind of environment is overflow rooms. So if you end up with a couple meeting rooms that hold 25 people and you get a bigger crowd than you thought, it's very easy to basically take your camera and your slides and whatever's being presented in the main room and stream it over to some overflow rooms really easily, so they can see exactly what's going on in the main room as if they were there. So that's been another popular one for conferences.
That, I think, is a brilliant idea. And like you said, if they're doing it now, I could see it being more and more common very soon. But before I get into my next question, it ties into that. It's going to be about control systems with your products in that same application. Again, I want to thank Ingram Micro, my keeping my cloud alive over here and in the sky. The world's largest technology distributor delivering flexible multi-chain supply solutions and more. If you go to ingrammicro.com, you can check out all the things that they have to offer for you as a integrator. Does Epiphan Systems have or products ranges that work well with certain brands of automation companies? So like we're talking about, it doesn't have to be the specific topic we just mentioned in terms of the streaming over. Let's just say like I'm doing a boardroom and then I have either a digital signage display or a touch panel that can serve as both, where it's streaming that information back to the panel. So as I'm walking by the boardroom, I can know, oh yeah, I'm missing whatever right now, or like you said, a big digital display out front. So if it is like say for other my Resi listeners like CDA or Infocom for the commercial guys, they can see what's going on, like you said, go in and interact. Is there any, you know, Crestron, Savant, Control 4 companies that you might work with well or partner with, or have any special drivers for those companies?
There are a few that we tend to get deployed with often, and it's mostly because, you know, a couple large integrators have found that to be a solution that works well together, and there are a few vendors. I can mention Jupiter is one. They build video walls. Okay. And we've often been used as an encoder in front of their video wall. They have a system called Canvas, which allows that video wall to be shared anywhere around the world, kind of thing. So if you've got a any kind of video wall, it could be an emergency response center, it could be a nuclear power plant, could be anywhere, and you need a remote consult of what's on, you know, maybe the chief of police or whatever is not in the headquarters and you want them to see what's on the wall. They have the ability to stream out. They can either use our gear to do that or they can use theirs, but we do the encoding for them typically in those kind of installs. So if they have a source, no matter what it is, that they want to get up on the wall, they plug it into our gear, we stream it into their system, and then they're able to display it and share it out. So in a control room environment, we have a couple vendors that we tend to get deployed with often. Mm-hmm. But in reality, the standards are such that in the video world where we play, the standards are such that we can really interop pretty easily with almost anyone. It's pretty rare that we run across a scenario where any kind of custom code or anything has to be kind of pieced together to make it work. So it's reasonably easy to mix and match us with a number of different vendors.
But let's say Brand X Automation Company is being deployed in a room and they want to use your solutions, and for some reason they just don't have a driver to get it to work, or they're not having the best of luck, which happens, you know, all the time. Can someone contact you and say, hey, you know, I'm really trying to, you know, I'm trying to deploy these systems and I want this to happen, but I'm having issues. Is there a way you can help us create a driver, or can you suggest someone that maybe has already done this, or a third party company, you know, that writes drivers that can help us, you know, marry these two products together?
So we actually have two levels of technical support at Epiphan. So when you first contact us, you'll get our first line technical support, and that's what we call them, technical support. If it's more of this kind of involved application big system stuff, often they'll hand it off to our applications team, and we've got some applications engineers that would then work with the customer to try to piece these things together and work with that vendor, whomever it is, to try to put things together. We also have, as you mentioned, we've got some system integrators and other reseller partners that have lots of capability in-house to put together custom code. And we often refer people to there if they say, hey, I want to integrate these three things together. Maybe they've got, say, a Crestron touch panel, or they've got some special piece of gear. We have an open API, so gear can easily control us remotely, but not everybody's, you know, technically capable of throwing together systems and putting them together very easily. So we will refer them sometimes. If it's something we can help them with, we'll do that. If it's a bigger job, sometimes we'll refer it off to one of our partners, who, that's their specialty, right? They bring all this stuff together, and whether it's an AMX controller or a Crestron or whatever, they know how to program those things up quickly. They're familiar with our API, and they can whip it together really quickly. So that's typically how it ends up happening.
So basically, Epiphan system has got your back, everybody. So if you're implementing these systems and you have issues, they can definitely point in the right direction or connect you to someone who can. Yeah. I think there's a few fields we haven't really talked about where your company is being deployed. We said healthcare, education, and IT, government, and this is like a few, like broadcasting is another major one, I think. And then what about like videographers or something like that? I guess that kind of would qualify under news reporting or something like that, or maybe more of like a niche. I like a video blogger or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we do get the bloggers for sure, because often they want to share, maybe they're writing a blog about latest application or a little app for an Android tablet or for an iPhone or an iPad or whatever. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to share that as part of their actual blog piece. It's very easy just to take one of our grabbers, plug that in, and all of a sudden now inside your computer you've got a perfect replication of what's on your iPad screen or your Nexus tablet or whatever it is you're plugging in. So we get a lot of those kind of technology review type things, because anything that can be displayed on a TV or a screen can be captured, and then you can build that in. So, you know, people used to be doing that with basic screenshots, right?
They take
a still shot and they bury it in. And screenshots are great for some stuff, but a lot of times a video just speaks much more loudly than a simple screenshot. And so we do see our gear used quite a bit for that. You mentioned the videographers. I think, you know, there's a large number of companies targeting, pure broadcast space. But most of the gear there is, as I mentioned before, very camera centric. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of sets our gear apart, is it's not just accepting of, you know, 720p and 1080p resolutions and very specific frame rates and these kind of things that are kind of standard in the broadcast industry. We take all kinds of crazy resolutions and custom timings and all this kind of stuff and able to capture that, which means in that space, if what you've got is not a camera that you're trying to capture, then often our gear is used to make it appear as a camera to whatever software you're using to manipulate that data once it's captured. So we do get deployed in all kinds of, you know, little niche-y places, healthcare and education, broadcast, and we talked about those, but there's lots of little industrial applications and that sort of thing. We had one where there was a factory, and some of the testing was going to be observed by the customer themselves. So they're building large equipment for a customer, and the customer is actually going to be present at the final test of the equipment. So they can actually see it going through its final test, and then they can sign off and accept it and have the gear delivered. But part of the area of the factory itself was very high voltage, and it wasn't safe to kind of bring customers around. So what they did was they captured all the displays, they put some cameras up, they captured those, and they built a nice little customer lounge right at the front of the factory, where basically they bring the customers in there, and instead of putting them in steel-toe boots and hard hats and marching them around the factory, they let them sit on a couch with a coffee and had all of the screens replicated in front of them. They could switch between any display and camera, and they could see everything that was going on in the factory. So sometimes it's more just a niche application here or there. Often it's outside of those kind of big areas that we talked about, healthcare and education. It's lots of different just industrial or corporate applications that you wouldn't necessarily think of without being in that business.
What about the HDMI products that you have, or I guess we talked about different video inputs and such. What current version of HDMI does it support? And are you guys ready for are doing already HDMI 2.0, and also supporting resolutions like 4K for all these newer panels and such?
Good question. So we're in HDMI 1.3 and 1.4 world right now.
Okay.
We're moving to HDMI 2 to support things like 4K. We don't have any product for sale today that supports 4K, but definitely we're moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. We tend to see a couple different things happen in the industry. One is a lot of the 4K stuff that's going on right now tends to be, I'll call it, pre-captured content, things like Netflix or this kind of stuff, where you're capturing video content, but it's being compressed kind of offline, if you want, and then downloaded and viewed or streamed. Where we tend to get deployed is in live encoding and live capture, and we're just starting to see that really start to take off with the 4K. So as what really turned the corner for us on the 4K was when guys like Dell and others started offering displays that were, you know, sub $1,000 that were 4K resolution. That all of a sudden gets a lot of displays out in the market that are 4K capable, and that drives the market to be able to capture those displays. And similarly on the camera side, we see a lot of cameras, you know, a year ago were all just full HD, anything that was 1080p was great. Now you're starting to see more and more of the 4K stuff they're not quite into all the cameras yet, but they're getting there. And yeah. So really timing our product to come to market when that's kind of come to full fruition.
Now, in terms of products, we mentioned, I think almost all of them. We talked about broadcasting or streaming to re-record, so the screen capture, frame grabbing, and you have a few smaller products, I believe, or other kind of subcategory, splitters and such, and keyloggers, looks like.
Yeah, so we have a couple kind of unique ones in our other category there. We have a KVM product that's basically the idea is it's great for headless machines. So if you're like an IT guy and you've got a bunch of headless machines and you want to just bring a laptop and make that the display, you can just plug into that over USB, plug that into any one of your machines in the rack, and all of a sudden, you know, standard KVM kind of stuff, but this is over USB. And then we have some splitters. So those are kind of companion products. There's lots of times when people are deploying our products. Some of them have built-in splitters in the product themselves, some of them don't. And so sometimes on occasion you'll need an external splitter. So we do sell splitters as well. We have a kind of a neat one called VGA printer, where basically the idea there was if you have something that's not connected to a printer, or is difficult to connect to a printer because it's not a PC that you can load drivers and that kind of stuff on, then you plug that into us and then we drive it into your network and over to your printer. So that was popular, especially in the medical domain, where they had a bunch of machines, they want to print something out, but it's not a machine that understands how to send a PostScript file to an HP printer kind of thing.
Very interesting. Can you list off every splitter product that you have and by price and availability? And I'm just kidding. By exact model number. Where are you guys? You're located in Canada, is that correct?
We've got two offices. We've got an office in Palo Alto, California,
Hey.
and we've got an office in Ottawa, Canada.
Okay. Are you guys international? Obviously, I mean, Canada and United States, but that's still North. I mean, that's still America in general.
Yes.
Are we talking about other countries as well?
Not typically for development or product sort of design. That's pretty much done in North America. But of course, we do have customers and partners worldwide,
Yeah.
and kind of sell all over the place. So I lost count a while ago, but we're over 100 plus countries where our products have been sold, and we have partners kind of all over the place. But the main R&D product development and kind of marketing and that sort of stuff is based in North America.
Do you have any new products that are in the works that you can speak on, or can you say, and if no, can you maybe allude to where the future EpiFan Systems is going?
I'm glad you asked that one. One of the things we've added very recently to a whole bunch of products is an SDI input. So we've always been, HDMI, DVI, VGA was always kind of our home base of signals that we wanted to be able to capture and stream and record. And we recently added SDI to that. So that got added to our grabber category, our recording and streaming products. And we brought in a brand new product called Pearl. It was just announced at Infocom a couple months ago. And that product is a very small, so kind of 12 inches wide and about 4 inches high kind of thing. Very small product that can bring in multiple HD streams at the same time, do picture-in-picture layouts, record it all, stream it all, connect up to CDNs. So we're really happy about that product. It made a big splash at Infocom, and we're just about to go to production with that one. So our first units are going to ship out at the end of August, and it's had a lot of interest already. And it's kind of an evolution of some of the stuff we put in the field a couple of years ago. We collected a whole lot of feedback from a whole number of different, medical users and education users, and built that feedback in and came out with this next generation box, and we think it's going to be extremely popular.
You mentioned Infocom, so I would assume that's probably one of the major ones for EpiFan Systems to be at. What about some of the smaller, similar like GovCom, I think, which is in a kind of similar timing with Infocom or like a subcategory of Infocom by them. Are there any other shows where you guys go to regularly?
Yeah, I would say, the ones that we exhibit at tend to be Infocom, obviously, and then it's kind of equivalent Integrated Systems in Europe, which is at the opposite time of the year, January, February timeframe. So we always have a big presence there, and then we typically will have a smaller presence or have people available at shows like IBC is a big one in Europe, and then NAB in North America.
Interesting.
And a few of the more sort of smaller, almost vertically centric shows, things like little medical shows or government shows. We don't tend to have a big booth there or anything, but we do attend those shows and meet with people in that space, and it's a great way to kind of get everybody together and find a way to meet everybody all within a short period of time instead of traveling all over the place. So there's lots of little shows we do attend. The big ones, Infocom and ISE, those are the ones where we kind of have a large booth that people can come and visit at us.
Okay. Now, if someone wants to get a hold of EpiFan Systems, they're interested. If you guys are interested, what's the best way for them to get a hold of the company or get more information on products, becoming a dealer possibly, or if they have any questions for you, what's the best route of communicating to the company?
I would say just the general grab all is info@epifan.com. So if they send an email to info@epifan.com, first thing that happens to that is it kind of gets triaged. So it'll come in, our guys will look at it, and they'll sort it out if it's a request to a reseller or some kind of technology partner with Epifan. We've got a group that looks after that. The technical question, it'll go straight to our tech support team. If it's more of a kind of business or product development kind of question, it'll come to me or our engineering team. So that's the easy way to kind of get a hold of us, is just info@epifan.com. There are some other ways on our website. We have a live chat. So if you want to just open something up with our tech guys right away, it goes straight to them. That's a very easy way. And if you are looking to be a partner of Epifan, there's a partner section right on our website. You can go there, and we actually have lots of detail there and contact information of people who are in charge of all our partners. So there is ways to just go to the website, find the right area of our website, and find contact information directly there.
If you guys want to look at the stuff we just talked about and are interested in learning more about the products and communicating, becoming a partner, like David mentioned, go to their website. It's www.epiphan.com, epifan.com. If you're salsa or like most people on the internet, probably on your cell phones right now, I know you guys better than you think, go to facebook.com/pages/epifan-systems. That's their Facebook. They also have a Twitter. It's just @epifan-systems. If you want to check out some cool user videos and implementations and educational stuff on this exact same products we also talked about, YouTube, great video site. You probably heard of it. youtube.com/user/epifan-systems. If you're more of the business oriented person, you have to keep your tie straight, go to linkedin.com/company/epifan-systems. And if you're more of the newer generation, the younger kids like myself, sort of, I'm not super young, I just play one on the internet, it's plus.google.com/epifan/about. That'll take you to their Google Plus profile. If you guys liked or didn't like what you hear on the show and you want to yell at me about it, you're welcome to tweet me on the internet tomorrow if it still exists. Twitter, it's @jmota3. That's my Instagram. Google Plus is probably just Johnny. Facebook is Johnny Mota. I don't know. You can just Google me. I'm on the internet. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you didn't like. If you want to learn more, you can email me direct. I don't like spam, so don't send me spam. Don't do that. It's Johnny, JohnnyMota, 3@gmail.com. I like Google, so that's all my stuff. And David, I appreciate your time. This has been very educational, and I'd like to have you guys back on the show maybe later on towards the end of the year or the beginning of the year, and we'll learn some new products, and we'll just get some more drill down into it.
That sounds great. Yeah, no, it was great to be here tonight, and anytime you want us back, we'd be happy to do it again.
Well, thank you again for your time, everyone. This has been AV Insider. Again, go to their website, www.epifan.com. This has been AV Insider. I'm your host, Johnny Mota. We'll catch you next episode.